Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Good day, Internet. It is Thursday, October 24th. I'm your host, Rob Zachney, and today I've got something a little different for you. This past weekend, I attended Paradox Interactive's PDXCon 2019 in Berlin at Paradox's invitation and at their expense for travel and lodging. While I was there, I had a number of interesting interviews that I'll be sharing with you over the coming days, but perhaps none so interesting as this conversation with Paradox creative director Johan Andersen. I've known Johan for about 10 years. When I first met him, he was heavily involved in the day-to-day design and programming of just about every game that Paradox made. In the time since then, Paradox has gone from being a small niche strategy studio to one of the most important names in PC strategy gaming. And Johan has gone from building games almost by hand to being the creative lead of a studio that employs hundreds. Johan and I met at the end of a long day, and these two topics were front of mind for both of us. Johan has become what most of us would call rich after a lot of lean years in Paradox's early days. Second, he's a game designer for whom financial and business success are becoming increasingly estranged from creative success.
I was talking about how, like, your generation of Paradox guys all came out pretty well. The business growing, the stock offering and everything. And we're still talking about, like, what does that progression look like for people who are just starting?
I don't know.
Yeah.
It's a bit challenging. For them, it's just a job.
Yeah.
For us, we built it through, like, we were a small garage company, and then just grew and grew and grew together. It's like people like Henrik and Chams and me and, of course, Fred.
In that time, he has also become a very well-off studio executive, thanks to an ownership stake in Paradox that paid off handsomely with an initial public offering in 2016. In 2019, he released the first new Paradox strategy IP since 2016's sci-fi 4X Stellaris, and the first game Johan has been the lead designer of since 2013's Europa Universalis 4.
It's tough because for a lot of people, when a job is just a job, I think the thing that gets scary is you're probably not looking at a great payday at the end of the rainbow, right?
No.
Like, people starting at Paradox now, there's never going to be another IPO. You know what I mean? There's never, like...
No, and there... That was an interesting thing. It was like, we lost a really, really good engine programmer. He was very well paid. He was very respected and had a great career with us. But he didn't go somewhere else for much higher pay. He went to a startup run by Linda Kibbe, that used to be a Paradox, a bunch of Paradox like Warps and Studios, because he could be a part of a new company growing up where he actually have a better opportunities for his future.
Yeah.
And it's like, you can never compete with that. So that's a challenge. And I super respect people that do this. But
there's also no guarantee that's going to work out.
No, like, but it's a... it's an industry veteran. Yeah. He's always going to be like able to land on his feet if you're an experienced graphics and engine programmer.
Yeah.
Was
there a moment when you knew this was going to work out, like, really, really well? Because I know that, like, early days of Paradox were pretty rough, right?
Yeah,
like,
well...
You dealt with some shady people.
We lost so many projects we didn't get paid for. A lot of times we're basically... You know how it is, you've been a freelancer.
Yeah.
You know how it is when you don't pay, when you don't get paid as a freelancer?
It's chaos.
Yeah, and... For us, it was like we were not getting paid from people, and we were supposed to pay people. We just couldn't pay people because we didn't get the money and so on.
Yeah.
So since we're a company, we have in Sweden the law is that you have to pay salaries first. Practically, almost never had money beyond that at some point. So we kept going through like freelance contacts for various things. Like, we have to take a new one because we're like 6 months late with small payments. Now, that sucked.
You'd have to fulfill a freelance job to keep the company going?
No, no. What I'm saying is that when we had, let's say, someone doing a layout on a manual.
Yeah.
Okay, we were sometimes months late with payment because we actually did not have a single kroner, because we would have not been able to pay salary for someone. And those are different.
Yeah, legally they're different.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, and it's like, now we're a big company. I know there's a lot of people that were really upset 15 years ago, but that was the reality.
Was there a point where you were like, oh shit, I think we're going to become pretty well off, like rich guys doing this? Or did it slow? Did it happen so slowly that?
Well,
like,
around the IPO.
Yeah.
It's like before, a little bit. I mean, before that, I had like we were taking in investors. I was sold a third of my shares for like what could have been like $20,000-$30,000.
Yeah.
Which is a lot of money.
Yeah.
But that was like 0.5% of the company. Today, that would have been like 100 times as valuable at least, or even more, I can't remember.
Yeah.
But that was a lot of money for me back then. That could, that helped me with the payment mortgage and all those stuff. But, and that was just 10 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a bit slowly. I don't think until we started with the IPO, we never realized it was going to be.
So for you, it was always like, you were just focusing on strategy.
Yeah.
And making your games.
Well, and making sure they were profitable and running the studio so that we earned enough money and so on.
Out of curiosity, has, I know you're still, like, you still say you have the final call on a lot of development. But how often, like, you mentioned that you're, like, flying up to Stockholm to do, like, what is it, three times a week, you said?
No, 3 weeks in a month.
3 weeks in a month.
Yeah, so, but I'm commuting, basically.
Yeah.
Because technically I live in Sweden.
That sounds pretty rough, honestly.
What?
Being away from your family for 3 weeks a month.
Yeah, but it's like, then I have a... But I'm there on weekends. And,
yeah.
But it's it gives a more focused life when I'm there and when I'm at work. So.
And then when you're home.
Yeah.
Yeah. Does it... Has it changed how you feel about the work at all? Because, like, there's a big difference between when you have to work. You know what I mean? When you, when you have to be there.
I technically haven't had to be at work since the IPO.
Yeah.
Of course, I'm not independently wealthy like Fred, but I have enough money that I could live off. I could live the rest of my life without having to work.
Yeah,
wouldn't be like super wealthy life, but
it'd be secure.
Yeah, secure.
Yeah,
mostly because I spent all my money getting a house without any loans on it.
Yeah.
So,
but has that changed how you feel, like, relate to the work? Has that changed your process?
It changed some things in that I know that I don't have to work.
Yeah.
So I work because I want to. And that means that when you know that this is something you do because you want to, not because you're forced, some things becomes easier. Some things becomes harder because, like the Imperator thing, we're like, okay, I was committed to making a game, and then I worked insane hours, and like, I have to get this in, I have to make the game. It's like, why am I stressing and burning myself for a project where I don't need to work?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
But that's a tough thing that, like, something I sometimes struggle with is, when I was a freelancer, there was that constant pressure of, like, if you do not finish this project, bad things are going to happen.
Yeah.
That makes it very easy to focus.
Yeah.
You know, like, silences a lot of questions. Like, it's very simple when you're just like, finish this somehow.
Yeah.
Or else.
Yeah.
It gets very hard. In some ways, there's less pressure, but it does get harder because suddenly you don't have to finish that project today.
No.
And you can take more time with it.
Yeah, but then also, that would have been the same if I was not at Paradox.
Yeah.
If I'm working for myself, it would have been the same, that thing. But here it's that there's a lot of other people working on a project. There's a lot of people's livelihood that depends on me making a good game. And that's a little bit stressful, that I'm doing this for fun. They're doing this because they need the money to for their lives.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of, like, am I making the right decisions?
Yeah.
That's a entirely different feeling.
I mean, you've had that feeling to some extent for a while, though. Because you had design leadership for a long time.
Yeah, for a long time. But when I, before the IPO, it was more like, I never thought about, I was more like, okay, I'm going to create the games. Everything always works so great. It's like, I've never had a game, a failed game launch in my life.
Yeah.
And Imperator wasn't failure, it was a financially successful game with high critics, but people didn't play it. And it just felt wrong.
I enjoyed Imperator, but thought it was a bit trivial. I wrote in my review at the time, wars eventually end, though, and Imperator struggles to find a purpose beyond them. It's the game's biggest drawback. In a surprisingly short amount of time, I often find myself secure from external attack, at peace with my political rivals, and governing over a largely tranquil and productive populace.
Do you feel like it was a failure?
Yes, because the people didn't like it. I did the wrong decisions in how to make the game. Because my view is not a game. I'm not an artist. I'm not here to create something. I don't create art. I'm not a craftsman or a factory worker that creates a product. I'm an entertainer. The stuff I create is there for people to be able to entertain. Of course, you can't please everyone all the time, so you always have people that dislike stuff you create. But I think that the vast majority that buys a game and not return it within 2 hours should feel happy about the purchase and continue playing it. And when it's a grand strategy game, I think that you should be able to get 20 to 100 hours of enjoyment of it, depending on how you want to play. And people that bought Imperator did not get that. I had the 7 stages of grief over Derv.
Yeah.
I had to do something about it. And we're slowly working, and we think we did a lot of things to get the game to that better position now. And I want the people that have bought it to have played the game.
Some of the frustration around Imperator seemed to be that people, it was the story of familiarity breeds contempt. Suddenly people were sick of mana systems.
Yeah.
Suddenly people, and it felt to me, like, and admittedly I didn't follow, like, I'm sure I did not follow as closely as you did. But it felt to me a little bit like what people were saying was, oh, we've seen your bag of tricks so many times. We've seen Paradox games so many times. This doesn't feel new or exciting. It doesn't feel... And I wasn't sure, like, to me, it was tough for me to read that criticism and know what you were supposed to do. Because to me, it felt a little bit like, was it that people weren't happy with Imperator? Or was it just that they've been playing Paradox games for years and maybe they're just a little tired of some of these design conventions?
All of the above.
Yeah.
But I think the primary thing was that it had a perceived lack of content, because a lot of the content was character events that happened and did with characters, and you could never see what happened to other characters. It was all hidden. That's...
Yeah.
It created, like, oh, there's lifeless character was a perception there. Also, there was not enough regional narrative, so it's like no major difference between the various nations, because we didn't have a lot of content or any, like, national ideas or anything like that at the start. We also had a lot of, like, direct action mechanics, which are more board game and less simulation, which is not really what the people expect from a PDS game. So at launch, it was a good game. It was mechanically connected there. The flow was correct. It was, I'd argue, bug-free and stable on those things. The reviews were good and everything was... But it was not a good PDS game. And that was the core thing. Not that I'm saying that PDS games are better than the games, but it was not the PDS game, because it didn't, wasn't enough simulation, wasn't enough perceived depth, perceived complexity. It felt, it didn't feel enough like a PDS game.
Most critics likewise gave Imperator positive reviews, but the reaction from the community is very different.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
In particular, people objected to what Paradox players call a mana system, where the game gives you resources that allow you to buy anything from technological breakthroughs to new generals to lead your armies. It is one of Johann's signature design ideas that he came up with when he made EU4, an idea that went a long way to simplifying Paradox's notoriously complex designs.
You mentioned that like you feel like you made the wrong decisions.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what those decisions were in retrospect?
Adding mana.
Yeah.
Because the mana was added because it was a good idea in EU4. And then we had to invent stuff that the various manas should be used for. And that's a completely wrong approach for it. And we never, the military one, we never really had a use for. It's like you were either feast or famine with the resources. It did, like, in EU4, it works because everything was designed around the powers and we iterated. It was like the design was around them.
Yeah. Mana was a solution to the slider problem.
Yeah.
To some extent, right?
Yeah, and the empty snowballing mechanism.
Right, so it made the decisions that you made with sliders, it made those clear because that was a push of a button and clear trade offs.
Yeah.
It fought snowballing because as you expanded, you kept having to spend mana to solve different problems and not progressing.
Yeah, and you didn't get more mana, yes, because you were bigger.
Those are still useful things to have in a PBS game.
Yeah, but they were detached because they didn't really have as good connection as EU4. And you didn't use them for like core system, like technology meant you constantly have to use them in EU4 and getting ideas and all of those things. But here it was like different things for different things. Some were, you spend a lot of small costs, some high costs, and it just didn't work great. But with the Kikoro update, we had the political influence, which is technically a semi-abstracted resource, but the political influence you gain, you use it for a lot of things, but you gain political influence depending on how loyal your government is. So if you have disloyal people in the government, you will get less influence. You spend influence for laws and various things, and we moved a bunch of prices to like either cost tyranny or stability or those things, and makes for a better game experience. I wish we had done that from the start. But we would never would have without the feedback.
Would that have ever, like, had it even occurred to you before you got the feedback?
No.
The best decision you could have.
Yeah, perhaps. But it's like, now it's a better game, it's a far better game, and the community was really great and helpful in making it.
I'm curious, it sounds like the Imperator launch was tough. It was a disappointment. It was an upsetting launch. What I guess surprises me is Paradox has had rough launches before.
Yeah, like, but it's one thing with rough launches and they're like, it's buggy, but I like the game. It's unfinished, but the game is good. But they did not like the game enough to play it.
And it was pretty finished.
Yeah. That's completely different. Like, I was there for Hot Shrine 3. It was unoptimized, it was buggy as hell, but people liked the game.
You know, I think famously at one point, I mean, after Rome 2 came out for Creative Assembly's Rome 2, I sort of laughed at the idea they could ever salvage that game into being a good one. And I said, well, you can't retroactively patch in a game design.
Yeah.
But it does look like you're on the way to disproving me, right? Like, that's
yeah, you can always change a game. If you're changing core mechanics, that's easy if you know what you want to do. It's harder if you want to like change a lot of things, well, graphics and such. But changing game mechanics is always doable if you have an idea of what you want to do.
You know, you're sort of putting Imperator back on the rails. That's sort of a tough experience. That is the sort of experience that kind of changes your outlook in some ways. Yeah. It changes how you approach your work. On the other side of that, like, was it also an experience that makes you think, like, fuck, man, maybe I should retire?
I did actually think about that quite a lot in the weeks after launch.
Yeah.
But then I went, like, I don't want to end my career with a failure.
Yeah.
So, like, I want to turn this around. Or at least try to turn it around.
Yeah. What's your ambition? You know, it's because you've achieved a lot. And so I think you're at an interesting point in your career because you're finding different motivations.
I want the Imperator to be amongst the most played PDS games. That's my short-term ambition.
Yeah.
Long-term ambition, I don't really know what game I want to make next.
Yeah. So you want to make a game?
Yeah, I think so. But at least currently, I want to help the guys that are working on new games to see what we can do at Centre.
Yeah.
We'll see. I need to figure out what my next long-term goal is.
Victoria 3 is still out there.
After I've said that to people, I do not dare to be the game director of Victoria 3 after the Imperator released. The expectations are beyond.
Yeah.
So, if we ever make that game, it's not going to be me as a game director. Fuck no.
Any other subjects that you're like, that I might want to make a game about? Like, is there anything left? Are there any stories in history left?
I would have loved to do a fantasy game one day.
Yeah?
I would have loved.
Runemaster still calling you?
I would have loved to reboot Runemaster, but that ship was sailed a long time ago.
Yeah.
But I mean, we'll see. The thing is, like, I don't need to stress my ambition. I continue working. I work as creative director. I help the other people get the games towards what they should do. Train new game directors. Get to do fun shit like this.
If you were giving advice to the younger version of yourself, right? Like if there were a Johan, you know, age 22 or something, just starting out, would you say, like, go be a designer at Paradox, go work, or you say, go find a startup?
I was already at Paradox when I was 22, so. I would just tell my 22-year-old, don't be such a fucking coward all the time. Take more risks.
Do you think, like, coming into the industry today as it currently stands, would the risk be, like, try to work your way up at Paradox, or would it be go strike out on your own and try to start something new?
I don't know. Because when I started at Paradox, Story Games was a part of a big company doing other things.
Yeah.
Like board games and role-playing games, and computing is a small part. And then that got bought out, and then basically Fred, Theo, me, Susanna, Lena bought Paradox Interactive for 1 krona from Paradox Entertainment because they wanted to, like, shut down the developer.
Yeah.
One of the best deals ever.
Deal of a lifetime, yeah.
Yeah. Theo and Fred was fronting all the financial risk. That's why they got the big shares. The rest of us got 2.5% of the company.
But when do you think you were powered there, curious? Like, when you look back, like, I should have been braver here. I should have had more nerve.
A lot of private stuff and a lot of game development things. Like, I should have been cockier at times, but nah, it's fine.
You know who you are.
Yeah, it's me. It's like, I wouldn't change a thing because I don't like changing.
Yeah, it's all worked out.
Yeah, it's right. Like, I can't complain. I have money in the bank. I get a beautiful wife, and I get a cool kid, and I got the best job in the world somewhere.
Things have worked out well for Johan. In many ways, his is the ideal game success story, the creative entrepreneurial ideal. He worked hard to get a new company off the ground with lots of fresh ideas for a different kind of strategy game than was common at the time. Now he's financially secure and comfortable as he enters the autumn of his career. But I also find myself thinking about the freelancers who were kept waiting for payments all those years ago, who were forced to assume risks on behalf of Paradox without any of the equity rewards. Similar things happened to me in my career, and I've never quite been able to forgive people for whom late payments and broken promises became anecdotes about those scrappy days before they made it big. It also highlights an omission in the usual narrative about Swedish labor practices. While a great many northern and western European countries do enjoy strong worker protections, the divide between full-time employees versus contractors and freelancers can be no less profound there than in the American corporate model. Labor laws are only as good as their inclusiveness is when it comes to the definition of who is a worker. But I also find admirable the degree to which Johan still measures success by the fun he created for players. By most measures, Imperator was a success story. Good reviews and good sales is a combination that most developers would happily take. But Johan still wants to make games that people love. That does it for this edition of Waypoint Radio. Be sure to rate and review us on your podcast platform of choice. I think we're a 5-star podcast, but it's not for me to say. You can follow everything we do on Twitter at Waypoint and find our website at waypoint.vice.com. This episode was produced by Ricardo Contreras. Theme music was the track Miss You by Bowen off the EP Pale Machine. You can learn more at waypoint.zone/Bowen, B-O-E-N. We'll have another episode of Waypoint Radio later this week. In the meantime, continue to question the neoliberal consensus.